Chapter 33. In respect of the next 7 weeks, all that is necessary to say is, first, that old Nelson, or Nielsen, failed in paying his politic call. The Neptune gunboat of H.M. the King of the Netherlands, commanded by an outraged and infuriated lieutenant, left the cove at an unexpectedly early hour. When Freya's father came down to the shore, after seeing his precious crop of tobacco spread out properly in the sun, she was already steaming round the point. Old Nelson regretted the circumstance for many days. Now, I don't know in what disposition the man went away, he lamented to his hard daughter. He was amazed at her hardness. He was almost frightened by her indifference. Next, it must be recorded that the same day the gunboat Neptune, steering east, passed the brig Bonito becalmed in sight of Carimata, with her head to the eastward to her captain, Jasper Allen, giving himself up consciously to a tender, possessive reverie of his Freya, did not get out of his long chair on the poop to look at the Neptune which passed so close that the smoke belching out suddenly from her short black funnel rolled between the masts of the Bonito, obscuring for a moment the sunlit whiteness of her sails, consecrated to the service of love. Jasper did not even turn his head for a glance. But Heemskerk, on the bridge, had gazed long and earnestly at the brig from the distance, gripping hard the brass rail in front of him, till, the two ships closing, he lost all confidence in himself, and retreating to the chart room, pulled the door to with a crash. There, his brows knitted, his mouth drawn on one side in sardonic meditation, he sat through many still hours a sort of Prometheus in the bonds of unholy desire, having his very vitals torn by the beak and claws of humiliated passion. That species of fowl is not to be shooed off as easily as a chicken. Fooled, cheated, deceived, led on, outraged, mocked at beak and claws. A sinister bird. The lieutenant had no mind to become the talk of the archipelago, as the naval officer who had had his face slapped by a girl. Was it possible that she really loved that rascally traitor? He tried not to think, but, worse than thoughts, definite impressions beset him in his retreat. He saw her a vision plain, close to, detailed, plastic, colored, lighted up. He saw her hanging round the neck of that fellow. And he shut his eyes, only to discover that this was no remedy. Then a piano began to play nearby, very plainly, and he put his fingers to his ears with no better effect. It was not to be borne, not in solitude. He bolted out of the chart room, and talked of indifferent things somewhat wildly with the officer of the watch on the bridge, to the mocking accompaniment of a ghostly piano. The last thing to be recorded is that Lieutenant Heemskerk, instead of pursuing his course towards Ternate, where he was expected, went out of his way to call at Macassar, where no one was looking for his arrival. Once there, he gave certain explanations, and laid a certain proposal before the governor, or some other authority, and obtained permission to do what he thought fit in these matters. Thereupon the Neptune, giving up Ternate altogether, steamed north in view of the mountainous coast of Celebes, and then crossing the broad straits took up her station on the low coast of virgin forests, inviolate and mute, in waters phosphorescent at night, deep blue in daytime with gleaming green patches over the submerged reefs. For days the Neptune could be seen moving smoothly up and down the somber face of the shore, or hanging about with a watchful air near the silvery breaks of broad estuaries, under the great luminous sky never softened, never veiled, and flooding the earth with the everlasting sunshine of the tropics, that sunshine which, in its unbroken splendor, oppresses the soul with an inexpressible melancholy more intimate, more penetrating, more profound than the gray sadness of the northern mists. The trading brig Bonito appeared gliding round a somber forest-clad point of land on the silvery estuary of a great river. The breath of air that gave her motion would not have fluttered the flame of a torch. She stole out into the open from behind a veil of unstirring leaves, mysteriously silent, ghostly white, and solemnly stealthy in her imperceptible progress. and Jasper, his elbow in the main rigging, and his head leaning against his hand, thought of Freya. Everything in the world reminded him of her. The beauty of the loved woman exists in the beauties of nature. The swelling outlines of the hills, the curves of a coast, the free sinuosities of a river, are less suave than the harmonious lines of her body, and when she moves, gliding lightly, the grace of her progress suggests the power of occult forces which rule the fascinating aspects of the visible world. Dependent on things as all men are, Jasper loved his vessel, the house of his dreams. He lent to her something of Freya's soul. Her deck was the foothold of their love. The possession of his brig appeased his passion in a soothing certitude of happiness already conquered. The full moon was some way up, perfect and serene, floating in air as calm and limpid as the glance of Freya's eyes. There was not a sound in the brig. "Here she shall stand, by my side, on evenings like this," he thought, with rapture. And it was at that moment, in this peace, in this serenity, under the full, benign gaze of the moon propitious to lovers, on a sea without a wrinkle, under a sky without a cloud, as if all nature had assumed its most clement mood in a spirit of mockery, that the gunboat Neptune, detaching herself from the dark coast under which she had been lying invisible, steamed out to intercept the trading brig Bonito standing out to sea. Directly the gunboat had been made out emerging from her ambush, Schultz, of the fascinating voice, had given signs of strange agitation. All that day, ever since leaving the Malay town up the river, he had shown a haggard face, going about his duties like a man with something weighing on his mind. Jasper had noticed it, but the mate, turning away, as though he had not liked being looked at, had muttered shamefacedly of a headache and a touch of fever. He must have had it very badly when, dodging behind his captain, he wondered aloud. "What can that fellow want with us? A naked man standing in a freezing blast and trying not to shiver, could not have spoken with a more harshly uncertain intonation. But it might have been fever, a cold fit. He wants to make himself disagreeable, simply," said Jasper, with perfect good humor. "He has tried it on me before. However, we shall soon see." And, indeed, before long the two vessels lay abreast with an easy hail. The brig, with her fine lines and her white sails, looked vaporous and sylph-like in the moonlight. The gunboat, short, squat, with her stumpy dark spars naked like dead trees, raised against the luminous sky of that resplendent night, threw a heavy shadow on the lane of water between the two ships. Freya haunted them both like an ubiquitous spirit, and as if she were the only woman in the world. Jasper remembered her earnest recommendation to be guarded and cautious in all his acts and words while he was away from her. In this quite unforeseen encounter he felt on his ear the very breath of these hurried admonitions customary to the last moment of their partings, heard the half-jesting final whisper of the end, "Kid, I'd never forgive you." With a quick pressure on his arm, which he answered by a quiet, confident smile, Heemskerk was haunted in another fashion. There were no whispers in it. It was more like visions. He saw that girl hanging round the neck of a low vagabond, that vagabond, the vagabond who had just answered his hail. He saw her stealing barefooted across a veranda with great, clear, wide-open, eager eyes to look at a brig, that brig. If he had shrieked, scolded, called names, but he had simply triumphed over him. That was all. Led on, he firmly believed it, fooled, deceived, outraged, struck, mocked at. Beak and claws. The two men, so differently haunted by Freya of the Seven Isles, were not equally matched. In the intense stillness, as of sleep, which had fallen upon the two vessels, in a world that itself seemed but a delicate dream, a boat pulled by Javanese sailors crossing the dark lane of water came alongside the brig. The white warrant officer in her, perhaps the gunner, climbed aboard. He was a short man, with a rotund stomach and a wheezy voice. His immovable fat face looked lifeless in the moonlight, and he walked with his thick arms hanging away from his body, as though he had been stuffed. His cunning little eyes glittered like bits of mica. He conveyed to Jasper, in broken English, a request to come on board the Neptune. Jasper had not expected anything so unusual. But after a short reflection, he decided to show neither annoyance, nor even surprise. The river from which he had come had been politically disturbed for a couple of years, and he was aware that his visits there were looked upon with some suspicion. But he did not mind much the displeasure of the authorities, so terrifying to old Nelson. He prepared to leave the brig, and Schultz followed him to the rail, as if to say something, but in the end stood by in silence. Jasper, getting over the side, noticed his ghastly face. The eyes of the man who had found salvation in the brig from the effects of his peculiar psychology looked at him with a dumb, beseeching expression. "What's the matter?" Jasper asked. "I wonder how this will end," said he of the beautiful voice, which had even fascinated the steady Freya herself. But where was its charming timbre now? These words had sounded like a raven's croak. "You are ill," said Jasper positively. "I wish I were dead," was the startling statement uttered by Schultz, talking to himself in the extremity of some mysterious trouble. Jasper gave him a keen glance, but this was not the time to investigate the morbid outbreak of a feverish man. He did not look as though he were actually delirious, and that for the moment must suffice. Schultz made a dart forward. "That fellow means harm," he said desperately. "He means harm to you, Captain Allen. I feel it, and I," he choked with inexplicable emotion. "All right, Schultz. I won't give him an opening." Jasper cut him short, and swung himself into the boat. On board the Neptune Heemskerk, standing straddle-legs in the flood of moonlight, his inky shadow falling right across the quarter-deck, made no sign at his approach, but secretly he felt something like the heave of the sea in his chest at the sight of that man. Jasper waited before him in silence. Brought face to face in direct personal contact, they fell at once into the manner of their casual meetings in old Nelson's bungalow. They ignored each other's existence Heemskerk moodily, Jasper, with a perfectly colorless quietness. "What's going on in that river you've just come out of?" asked the lieutenant straight away. "I know nothing of the troubles, if you mean that," Jasper answered. "I've landed there half a cargo of rice, for which I got nothing in exchange, and went away. There's no trade there now, but they would have been starving in another week if I hadn't turned up." "Meddling. English meddling. And suppose the rascals don't deserve anything better than to starve, eh?" "There are women and children there, you know," observed Jasper, in his even tone. "Oh, yes. When an Englishman talks of women and children, you may be sure there's something fishy about the business. Your doings will have to be investigated." They spoke in turn, as though they had been disembodied spirits, mere voices in empty air, for they looked at each other as if there had been nothing there, or, at most, with as much recognition as one gives to an inanimate object, and no more. But now a silence fell. Heemskerk had thought, all at once. "He will tell him all about it. She will tell him, while she hangs round his neck laughing." And the sudden desire to annihilate Jasper on the spot almost deprived him of his senses by its vehemence. He lost the power of speech, of vision. For a moment he absolutely couldn't see Jasper. But he heard him inquiring, as of the world at large. "Am I, then, to conclude that the brig is detained?" Heemskerk made a recovery in a flush of malignant satisfaction. "She is. I am going to take her to Macassar in tow. The courts will have to decide on the legality of this," said Jasper, aware that the matter was becoming serious, but with assumed indifference. "Oh, yes, the courts. Certainly. And as to you, I shall keep you on board here." Jasper's dismay at being parted from his ship was betrayed by a stony immobility. It lasted but an instant. Then he turned away and hailed the brig. Mr. Schultz answered. "Yes, sir. Get ready to receive a tow rope from the gunboat. We are going to be taken to Macassar." "Good God! What's that for, sir?" came an anxious cry faintly. Kindness, I suppose, Jasper, ironical, shouted with great deliberation. He might have been becalmed in here for days. And hospitality. I am invited to stay on board here. The answer to this information was a loud ejaculation of distress. Jasper thought anxiously. Hi, the fellow's nerves gone to pieces, and with an awkward uneasiness of a new sort, looked intently at the brig. The thought that he was parted from her for the first time since they came together shook the apparently careless fortitude of his character to its very foundations, which were deep. All that time neither Heemskirk nor even his inky shadow had stirred in the least. I am going to send a boat's crew and an officer on board your vessel, he announced to no one in particular. Jasper, tearing himself away from the absorbed contemplation of the brig, turned round, and, without passion, almost without expression in his voice, entered his protest against the whole of the proceedings. What he was thinking of was the delay. He counted the days. Macassar was actually on his way, and to be towed there really saved time. On the other hand, there would be some vexing formalities to go through. But the thing was too absurd. He beetles gone mad, he thought. LL be released at once. And if not, Messman must enter into a bond for me. Messman was a Dutch merchant with whom Jasper had had many dealings, a considerable person in Macassar. You protest? H'M. Heemskirk muttered, and for a little longer remained motionless, his legs planted well apart, and his head lowered, as though he were studying his own comical, deeply split shadow. Then he made a sign to the rotund gunner, who had kept at hand, motionless, like a vilely stuffed specimen of a fat man, with a lifeless face and glittering little eyes. The fellow approached, and stood at attention. You will board the brig with a boat's crew. Yeah, Minher. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.